This episode is sponsored in part by Launch Darkly. Take a look at what it takes to get your code into production. I'm going to just guess that it's awful because it's always awful. No one loves their deployment process. What if launching new features didn't require you to do a full-on code and possibly infrastructure deploy? What if you could test on a small subset of users and then roll it back immediately if results aren't what you expect? Launch Darkly does exactly this. To learn more, visit launchdarkly.com and tell them Corey sent you and watch for the wince.
A couple of weeks ago, a blog post from Andreessen Horowitz, motto, over three quarters of our partners at Block Corey on Twitter, talked about the cost of cloud, a $1 trillion paradox. Its central thesis was that companies were leaving money on the table by not repatriating workloads to data centers and proceeded to lay out an economic case for doing just that. Needless to say, the internet took issue with this. The responses ranged from well-thought-out tweet threads to incoherent comments left on various forums to Hacker News remaining Hacker News. I would encourage you to read that post if you haven't already, because most of what I'm about to say next is gonna make not a lot of sense without that. And I like their points to be taken fairly, not just viewed through the lens of my analysis of them. Their data is largely correct. I haven't discovered anything that they've said on the data side that I would object to. Instead, my concerns with the report stem from the lack of context that they have into some of the examples that they cite. The lies companies tell themselves internally and equating spend on cloud as being fungible to spend on running one's own data center. They start with a Dropbox example, because Dropbox is the poster child for cloud repatriation, in no small part because there are so few companies actually repatriating workloads that Dropbox invariably gets mentioned. In their S1, Dropbox claimed a $75 million savings in cloud spend by moving some workloads to their own data centers. This is a heady number, but in the 2 years surrounding their IPO, they spent $200 million in capital expenditures, which doesn't factor directly into COGS or cost of goods sold. This really becomes a matter of which pocket does the money come out of? I sincerely doubt there was an actual spend reduction of $75 million over 2 years when you factor in the amortized cost of the data centers, the servers that live inside of them, and the additional staff that you need to run those facilities effectively. Further, Dropbox's migration was the correct move for them along several axes. It was reportedly a single, very large, very well-understood workload of storing user files. That use case wasn't scaling in dramatic swings up and down. The capacity growth was easy to predict, and Dropbox engineers certainly understood it start to finish. That use case didn't lend itself particularly well to S3's economic model at the time. I mean, the decision to migrate this workload predated infrequent access tiering, as well as a host of analytics offerings. Lastly, Dropbox was basically out of ideas around product innovation. A folder that synced everywhere is what they started out as, and the industry loved them for it. Had they not repatriated that workload, their engineering resources would have instead focused on other problems, and we may well have been cursed with their bloated, unwanted desktop application far sooner, along with its basically unused collaboration facilities. At that point, Dropbox innovation had either stalled or taken some dark turns, as viewed externally. Saving money on their solved problem workload by running the storage workload elsewhere made sense. That's not most companies, and that's not most workloads. Even Dropbox itself announced it was moving a 34 petabyte data warehouse to AWS last year. It turns out that cutting costs is not growth, and cloud is not purely infrastructure. Engineering skills are a limiting factor today in how much companies can achieve. Developers are hard to find, expensive to hire, and basically most of the money companies raise from VCs goes toward hiring. Companies that are significantly focused on cutting costs are generally companies who find themselves in decline. One of the more surprising things that I learned when I started fixing AWS bills for customers was that the need was very rarely cut the bill as deeply as possible, so much as it was optimize the spend to what makes sense for our environment. Any suggestions that required significant engineering effort, and it's hard to think of a heavier lift than migrating to or from a data center, are generally tabled until there are other strategic factors in play. It's also worth pointing out that the differentiated services that the major cloud providers offer go well beyond a pile of VMs, some disk, and a network. There are managed database offerings, machine learning-powered suites of tools, and other various bits and bobs. But let's pretend for a minute those things aren't true. Should there be an event that impacts the availability of the cloud provider's network, or their storage offerings, or their ability to keep VMs online, they're going to be better situated to diagnose and resolve the issue in less time than any of their customers are likely to be able to achieve themselves. Let's also state an uncomfortable truth. When your provider takes an outage, and they always, always will, given enough time, that's what computers do. There is some cold comfort in being down at the same time as a good portion of the internet is also down. If AWS or GCP has a bad day, so do a lot of companies. Conversely, if it's just your data center that's taking an outage, and it's an otherwise slow news day, your reputation for reliability will definitely take a hit.
This episode is sponsored by ExtraHop. ExtraHop provides threat detection and response for the enterprise, not the starship. On-prem security doesn't translate well to cloud or multi-cloud environments, and that's not even counting IoT. ExtraHop automatically discovers everything inside the perimeter, including your cloud workloads and IoT devices, detects these threats up to 35% faster, and helps you act immediately. Ask for a free trial of detection and response for AWS today at extrahop.com/trial.
Their post goes on to talk about the margins that cloud providers run on, but it's hard to get at those numbers without a giant raft of assumptions. Let's take hard drives as an example. It's a pretty clear bet that AWS pays less for hard drives with enterprise performance and reliability characteristics than your company will. Volume discounting and well-established supplier relationships make that a near certainty. If they slap that hard drive into a server that's part of EBS, they'll present that drive to you in the form of a volume, in any size you'd like. Assuming it's a GP3 volume, it's going to cost you 8 cents per gigabyte per month. If that hard drive fails and needs to be replaced, you'll never notice or care. EBS drive failures manifest as a very brief latency spike, to the point where if you're not looking for it, it'll be incredibly easy to miss that it happened at all. The networking investment necessary to ensure that your instance can send data to and from that hard drive at appropriate speeds has also already been made. This is a very non-trivial exercise when doing data center buildouts. You don't have to think at all about it in the context of a cloud provider. All of this speaks to cost that you don't have to incur yourself. Lastly, let's assume that everything the analysis says about margins, markups, and recapturing value is absolutely true. If you repatriate $100 million a year in cloud spend, you'll save $50 million a year after the migration is complete. I strongly disagree with that estimate, but let's pretend that it's true. Will the additional $50 million that you've saved in cost of goods sold actually improve the price of your company's stock? In theory, it absolutely should, but look at the markets that we're seeing. Amazon stock has largely been flat over the past year, during a time when their ability to deliver anything to anyone sent their utility and revenues into the stratosphere. There are companies now whose market capitalizations exceed most analyst consensuses of their total addressable market. That strikes me as more than a little bizarre. The reason I mention it is that it's exceedingly unclear to me that a meaningful shift in a company's margins is guaranteed to have a positive result on their stock price. The markets seem increasingly divorced from underlying fundamentals, but insofar as the principles should hold true, I can't shake the feeling that the company would be better served by taking the CapEx and build-out costs of migrating to a new data center and instead invest that money into releasing offerings and features that expand their revenues. Companies chase growth. When that shifts, they're not long for this world. All things considered, this is a decent blog post, and we're better as an industry for it being published. Though I disagree mightily with some of the conclusions the authors reach, their methodology seems sound, and their data is clearly valuable.
This has been a Humble Pod production.
Stay humble.